All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. We're going to get started here. I'll give you a quick heads up on what we're doing today. We're going to start off with Destination Health in the first hour, and second hour will be carryover or general questions depending on what we have. Right now, calls are a little light, questions are light. But the pattern in the last couple of weeks has been that we end up getting slammed with questions on this segment. Last week we ended up doing 3 hours, didn't get to all the questions. So if you jump in right now with a question, a comment, a topic, whatever you've got, press 1 on your phone if you haven't done that already, and we'll get to you. If you wait, we might not, because today I can only do 2 hours. So I'll get to as many calls and questions as I can. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking, and today is Destination Health. You can find us on Facebook. Look up Destination Health on the Audio Road Network. Today's the show where we take your calls and answer your questions about everything health, fitness, diet, nutrition, training, disease, drugs, food, you name it, we'll talk about it here on the show. And of course, we wrap it around that trucking lifestyle, talking about how to stay fit and healthy on the road. And my co-host, Kim Cockerham, is with me today. Kim, welcome back.
Hi, glad to be here, Kevin.
Hey, I just want to remind everybody that our mission on this show is to make drivers in the trucking industry an example of what's possible. We don't want to make them as healthy as the rest of the population, because that's not a very high bar to shoot for. We want to show that even living and working in a truck and with all the challenges that creates around food and health, that it absolutely can be done and people can get healthier. And the more we do it, the more we find, cold as it seems when you first think about it.
No, and I think what I love about this too is that I don't feel as alone doing this. You know, you're all of us want to be healthy and go this path, and we know we're individuals, but it's so cool knowing that we're all doing this together. It's huge for me.
Yeah, and you know, it's great to be doing it together, have that support, but the other thing is that the more people get involved, the more good ideas keep coming from the listeners. You know, they're figuring this stuff out, and then they're bringing it back and sharing. And it really, you know, I on the regular show, I've been doing a book review for quite a few weeks now on the 7 habits. And one of those is called Synergize. And all that means is work together. That if I tried to work on my own and I came up with 2 ideas, and you worked on your own, you might come up with 2 ideas. And when we get together, it wouldn't be 4 ideas, it would be 6. That by working together, you create more than you ever could working separately. And you 2 people don't double the output, they more than double the output. So coming together is powerful. And that this show, this segment, the Destination Health, has been such a great example of that. People jumped on board quick and started figuring out really cool stuff.
Yeah, and even those that didn't jump on board quick, it's kind of cool that they still listened and, you know, gave it a try and then found all the benefits. And they're some of our biggest supporters, you know, and our biggest what we call sneezers, you know, that
yeah.
spread the love to everybody else. And it's, I think that's what I'm loving too, is that ripple effect, you know. People are spreading this to their family and talking and bringing them in to come and listen and see what this is. And you're, you know, they're automatically thinking, who else in my life could use this information? It's just such a huge paying it forward.
Yeah, and you bring up another good point there. I mean, I've been on the air 10 years now, and 99.5% of everything I've talked about in those 10 years has been trucks, 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 trucks. And, you know, I was always surprised when every once in a while I would get a call or an email from somebody who wasn't in trucking and listened to my show and loved it. And I would think, why in the world would you listen to the show if you weren't in trucking? You know, I was just always shocked by that. Well, now what we're finding is we are getting listeners who aren't in trucking at all, but I understand why this time. And it's mostly people sharing it with their friends and family, like you said, which I absolutely love. They're saying, hey, you know, look, I tried this. It works. And then we have these other listeners coming in that are family members or friends, and I love that idea of growing the tribe that way.
Yeah, yeah. Like Dave Ramsey says with budgeting, you know, change your family tree, and this is the place.
Yeah, yeah. So speaking of book reviews, that's something we're going to be doing a lot of on this show. And you know, I'm going to do most of the book reviews on this show a little differently. On the regular show, like I said, The 7 Habits, I've been on that for a couple weeks now. I do a little piece at the beginning of each show. I'm going to do it a little different with most of the health nutrition books because there's so many of them and there's so much information that I don't want to take a lot of time getting really detailed. I want to just give somebody an idea of what the book covers and why I think they should be reading it or listening to it. So we'll probably cover most of our book reviews in one or two shows. There may be some exceptions to that, but I'm going to go through them pretty quickly and just give people an idea of some stuff they might want to be listening to or reading. Now, today's book that we're going to review is called Nourishing Traditions. And this is one I would not recommend on audio. This really isn't a book. It's really long. On audio, it would end up being, well, I don't know. It's long, though. It's like 674 pages. That's a long book. So, and a lot of it is recipes. So you don't want to be sitting through listening to somebody explain what's in a recipe. Or you might, but I wouldn't. This is a book that is like kind of like a cookbook, but it also has a tremendous amount of information about why you would cook in certain ways or use certain foods or certain ingredients. So it is a really good read to help you learn more about nutrition. But then the cool thing is you learn a lesson about a specific food and then you learn some recipes and some ways to cook that food. So this would be more like one of those books you want in the truck with you. You want the physical book. You want it at home in the kitchen. And it's all about traditional diets. And there's two authors. One of them is the current president of the Weston A. Price Foundation, the founder, actually. So there's a lot of Weston Price influence here. Weston A. Price was also a big influence on the NTA, the association I belong to now is an NTP. So there's a lot of tie-in here. This was a reference book we had to use a lot in the NTP program. And it's really all about the traditional diets, the way people prepared and ate food prior to industrial food. And we know that was one of the events that really started the downturn of our health was industrial food. We also know that we can go way back, and agricultural food was actually one of our downfalls. And we see that now, and people say, well, you know, that doesn't really make sense. You know, agriculture started 10,000 years ago. Our health declines, you know, only started 100 years ago. And that's not necessarily true. Clearly, when, you know, 100 years ago when we started industrial food and things like that, things have gotten worse fast. But if we look at people prior to agriculture, say 10,000 years ago, they were actually way healthier. And some of this is generational. And Weston Price was the first one to really go back and look at people who hadn't switched over yet. They didn't really practice a lot of agriculture. They still had their traditional diets, and many of them resembled more hunter-gatherer type diets than they did agricultural diets. So there's a lot in there about very different diets, and this is something Weston Price found, was that the human body can survive on a lot of different kinds of foods and even wildly different diets and be very healthy, but there were certain things that they all had in common. And I love that approach. Remember, there was a time when I was saying, look, there are some people that say you should eat this way. Some people say that you should eat this way. And then another group says you should eat this way. And we spend all our time arguing about the differences. Mm-hmm. But when I looked at them all, I said, wait a minute, why should we spend all this time arguing about the differences? They're really tiny. Look at the similarities. Look at how similar these things are, and maybe that's why they all work. So instead of us pointing the finger at somebody else saying, wait a minute, you're not eating the way I eat, so you must be wrong. Why don't we look at them and say, wow, look at all the things we agree on.
Mm-hmm,
that seems
exactly
to make so much more sense. And maybe that's where we'll really learn what works by looking at what we agree on. And then maybe the differences just aren't that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
So we're
going to
come back.
Great.
We're going to talk a little bit more about this book, and then we're going to get to some calls and questions. Stick around. We'll be right back. Kevin Ruff. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Kim Cockerham is with me. Kim, I have a great analogy to kind of go along with this idea of let's look at the things we agree on, and then maybe we could move on and debate some of the things we don't agree on, and we'll learn from that. So the interesting story, when I first started the radio show, I knew who Bruce Mallinson was. He didn't know who I was. I had been reading his articles for years, and I had learned a lot from him, and we were pretty different. He, at that time, focused a lot on high-performance engines, and I was obviously focusing on fuel mileage and efficiency. And people started calling Bruce and saying, you've got to call this guy. He's talking about this stuff on the radio, and he's telling people this, and he's just wrong, and you need to call him, and you need to straighten him out. And one night, I remember I was getting ready to do the show, and we were a couple minutes from going on the air, and I see the call up on the board, the first call is Bruce Mallinson. I'm like, oh, I know who that is. I know who that is. should I ignore him? Should I? And I thought, no, I'm just going to take him right off the start of the show. We'll see how things go. And the interesting thing was, Bruce didn't call to tell me I was wrong. He called to ask certain questions, and we became friends really quickly. And what we found was that even though we were coming from totally opposite ends, that we agreed on about 90% of everything we talked about right off the bat. And what we did was we focused on that 90% and we worked together, and I learned from him and he learned from me. And we still debate some of that other stuff. There are still some things he believes in and I don't, and vice versa. And that's good. And there are things that I've changed my mind about and he's changed his mind about. So I think when we go into this, you know, we've become a society that just wants to fight and argue about everything. Politics, money, food, mm-hmm. diet, religion. And I think if we would just stop for a second and focus on what we agree on first, I'm not saying we should never disagree and debate. I'd love to debate. But I find it so much more constructive if we first focus on all the things we agree on and then move on. And debate the others. And I think we'll actually learn that. I think it opens up people's mind. Instead, if you meet somebody for the first time and all you want to do is argue about everything, well, you're never going to build a relationship that way, and you're going to miss that opportunity to learn from that person. Because we all have something to share and learn from somebody else.
I absolutely love that, Kevin. We can use that in so many areas of our life, absolutely every area of our life. That is just brilliant.
Yeah, so, you know, when you look at what Weston Price did and what this book, Nourishing Traditions, does, it looks at a lot of different ways of eating and food and traditional cultures. And if we look at the similarities, they far outweigh the things that people would disagree about. And I went on to Amazon, and this is a popular book. It's got almost a couple thousand reviews, I think. And one of the things I always do is I always click on the one-star reviews first. Every time I'm looking at a book, I always click on the one-star reviews. I want to see what people are criticizing the book about. Many times, that's what makes me want to read it, the things that people find to criticize about it. And this book gets slammed. Now, it has overwhelmingly good reviews. Because it has so many reviews, there are a lot of one-star. And I went through them, and it just kind of makes me chuckle. The things that people chose to say they hated this book because. And I think, wow, are you that closed-minded that you bought this book, you read it, and that's all you got out of it? That you just hated it because there was a recipe in there that said, you know, mix ground beef and ground brains. And they hated the book because of that, because first off, where are you going to find brains? And I'm not going to eat that. I thought, wow, why would you even bother to spend the money and read if you're that closed-minded? It's a really good book, and it's one of those books, again, I think people should have the physical copy. And it's a cookbook, but it's also like an instructional book about why we would eat this way and a lot of background. And it was interesting. This week we were on the road and we stopped to do the show. And by the time we stopped, we didn't have a whole lot of time and I hadn't eaten yet that day. And I thought, I could probably make it through the show, but it'd be nice to eat. So Lisa ran out and got something. And she knows that I love Vietnamese pho. It's spelled pho. And they actually pronounce it almost like pho. I can't ever get the pronunciation right. When I hear somebody who knows how to say it, I can't ever say it right. And she brought it back, and it was so good. I just love it. And I was standing there thinking about it. And this is like, you could almost call it the national dish. I mean, it's a very, very traditional, common dish in Vietnam. And when I was looking at it and thinking about all I've learned about food, I thought, this is just amazing. In one dish, they figured out so many of the basic concepts of really nutritional food in one dish. And it's why it's one of their staple dishes. So here's the reason this is such a healthy dish. And this is the kind of stuff you'll find in this book, Nourishing Tradition. So the first part of pho is the broth. And it's a very, very long simmered broth. And there are lots of different ways of making it, different ingredients and bones and meat and vegetables and a lot of different herbs and spices. And when you start looking at them, you realize the nutritional content and the fact that it's long cooked. We talk about bone broths, which are very traditional in a lot of cultures. And that's kind of what this is. Because the broth is simmered so long, it pulls a lot of the nutrients that we don't normally have access to, minerals and things that need a lot of cooking time. So that's the way they make the broth, and the broth is made separately. Then in the broth are also a lot of herbs, and we never realize how much nutrition are in herbs, and, you know, they should be fresh and serve certain ways, and you need to get them on a regular basis, and that's a part of this broth. Then when you serve it, you get a bowl of broth, and you get a whole bunch of condiments on the side, what we would refer to as condiments. So there might be things like sliced jalapenos, bean sprouts, more herbs like cilantro or mint or Asian basil and things like that. Then there are, you know, chili sauces with garlic and chili sauces. And there's just this whole bunch of really fresh, even the meat that you put in. The one I had very thinly sliced beef, and it was raw. And that's an important factor, because one of the things Weston Price found was that every really healthy society ate raw animal product and cooked. And they ate raw vegetables, and they ate cooked vegetables and fermented vegetables. All three different ways of preparation provided different nutrition, and even fermented meats and fermented fish. So there's like three ways of preparing these foods: raw, cooked, and fermented. And that works for almost everything: fish, meat, vegetables, all kinds of things. And what we now know is that all three ways of preparing those foods make different nutrients available to us. So if we mix all three, then we get, you know, even more nutrition out of the same foods. And that was an important thing that he determined. And what's interesting is you go back and you look at these cultures, and they all ate that way. They didn't know why. They didn't understand the science behind this. And I kind of said, I think it was last week, maybe you don't need to know all the details. Maybe you don't even want to know all the details. Remember I was talking about stop focusing on nutrients, you know, the fad of the month, whatever it happens to be, eat this food, eat this nutrient. People didn't eat that way. They didn't think that way. Instinctively, somehow, over many generations, we learned that if we prepared food this way and if we ate food this way, we were healthier. And that is, you know, hundreds or thousands of years of wisdom. And then all of a sudden we thought, you know, science would fix all of that stuff. And it's been a horrible failure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all we have to do to avoid all the confusion is just say, why don't we just go back to eating the way people ate for generations and they were healthier. They didn't have all these diseases we have now. So Luther, another segment. I'm going to get to a break, but we'll come back and we will get to some calls here in a little bit. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Thank you. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rothbard. This is Destination Health. Kim Cockerham is here with me. Kim, so, you know, I thought it was interesting. We got this. I want to go back to the bow real quick. I just sat there and I looked at it and I thought, wow, this one dish. They've got the broth with all the bones and the herbs, and it's long simmered, and we have all the nutrition that comes out of that. We have all these raw condiments. In Vietnam, there also would have been fermented to go along with this. There wasn't any here, but that would have been a part of this in a traditional. They would have had like a kimchi-style part of this. And in this one very traditional dish, you get all the benefits of long-cooked foods, all the benefits of raw foods, which still have a lot of enzymes active in them. When you put this all together, you get a tremendous amount of nutrition in one dish. And if you look historically, you know, I had nice, lean, thinly sliced raw beef. Well, there was probably some of that in Vietnam, but you can also bet that there were a lot of other animal parts that would have gone into this soup traditionally. And we even need to look back at more of that, because they wouldn't have wasted a single part. You know, they wouldn't have just used lean beef in this. They would have been using, you know, bits and parts and things we don't even like to talk about, but are actually really good food and really nutritious. And that was one of the big criticisms of the book, Nourishing Traditions. People said, oh, my God, the food is just horrible. Who would ever eat that stuff? Well, that's part of what we have to get over. Because we ate that stuff for a very, very long time, and it was healthy. And what I guess what I don't understand is why people have such an aversion to eating something just because it wasn't normal for them. I mean, people would say, oh, my God, I can't believe somebody would eat a horse, or somebody would eat a snake, or, but why not? An animal is an animal. I mean, why do we distinguish between one animal and another in a way to make one sound like it wouldn't be good? You know, it's just what we ate traditionally we think is normal. And because we were raised only eating the lean muscle meat, we think that eating the kidney is, like, gross. But why? If you were raised eating the kidney, you don't think it's gross.
Yeah, and you know, it's like that, what's that show on TV where the guy goes and eats all that, we think, strange stuff, and you look at it, and but it all, it's usually in different countries, and that's just what they do. It's part of their culture, but it does kind of open your eyes.
Yeah, food is food, and I just laughed that people had such strong criticisms of this book, because she was recommending things, eating things that just aren't normal for us. But they're just food. They're just parts of animals. And you know, if you're willing to eat one animal or one part of an animal, I don't know why you're so, you know, freaked out about eating a different animal or a different part of the animal. And when we ate that way, we were just much healthier, much more vibrant. So one of the things, you know, you want to open your mind up about is being open to eating a wide variety of foods, too. That's one of the things I've really been working on. I almost never go into a restaurant anymore and order an entree. I tend to pick and choose. Maybe a couple little appetizers, maybe a charcuterie plate that has, you know, three or four different kind of meats and cheeses and pickled vegetables. And then I'll order a salad with a lot of different things in it. So finding variety really helps fill in some of those nutritional gaps as well. And one more topic I want to talk about that's in this book and is also a pretty controversial topic, and that's grains. And we've been talking a long time about just eliminate the grains completely. This book talks about grains, and there are even recipes in here using grains, but she's pretty clear about the fact that, one, traditional cultures ate very different grains from what we eat today. They didn't eat this hybridized, genetically modified wheat over and over and over and over, you know, highly processed. But she also says, don't believe the whole grain hype, because that's not the way our ancestors ate grains either. They ate much more traditionally grown grains, things like spelt, and there's things we don't even understand anymore, and they soaked and fermented them. And they didn't understand why, but we now know that soaking and fermenting grains gets rid of all the bad stuff that's in there. There's phytic acid, there's anti-nutrients, there's all these things that are just really bad for humans. And soaking and fermenting those grains gets rid of the majority of that. So now, if you're willing to soak and ferment your grains, you could eat them, and they wouldn't necessarily be bad for you, although there's still much higher gluten content now than there used to be, and that could still be a problem. But really, the point that a lot of people have come to is, first of all, that's a lot of work, aren't going to do it. And second of all, even after you do it, you've made the food kind of safe to eat, but there's virtually no nutrition in it. So why would you eat it? It is kind of what people are really starting to find out now. There, Mark Sisson did an excellent article on this week, and I'll try to get the link over to you. And he said, you know, I've written about grains a lot of times, but I've never really sat down and just laid it all out. And his conclusion was clearly, there is no reason ever for a human to eat one of these. So then you think, well, why did we start eating them then? Why are they traditional foods in a lot of diets? And it turns out that they ate them because there just wasn't enough other food available. It was famine. That's why we started eating grains. And look, if I'm starving and there's no other food to eat, I'm going to eat them too. But today, there's no need for us to eat these. We have so much food available to us. Why would we work so hard to eat something that has virtually no nutrition?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, when you were talking about this book, one thing I love about this is, and I love how you encourage people to get the book and not listen to an audio, because every ingredient, every recipe, every page has a sidebar to teach you all the way through. And I think that's what eating and cooking and stuff should be, almost an experience, you know, to just step back and not dive in like we usually do, and just, you know, learn a little bit more about what we're putting in our body and the tradition behind it and all the different things. It's just very cool.
Yeah, you know, I there's just so much to talk about. We've covered the book. I don't want to go too much more into that. Get the book. It's one of those you should just have. Great stuff in it. But something else I've been reading a lot about recently, and I might as well throw it in here because it kind of goes along with this. And there are, you know, I love all this traditional stuff, going back and finding things that worked really well and we've gotten away from, and now we understand why they were a better way of doing things. But I also love technology. I mean, I'd love to find the positive side of technology. And there are certainly a lot of negatives. I've talked about it, and it's really hurting a lot of us in a lot of different ways. But there's a huge upside to technology, and one of them that I'm seeing is this move away from a lot of government regulation. And I'm sure my listeners know I'm just not a big fan of government regulation. And it's interesting how technology is wreaking havoc with regulation. I'll give you a couple examples people are really familiar with. The taxi cab industry is highly regulated. I mean, there are so many rules and regulations, and I don't think people realize it's an overly regulated industry. And all of a sudden, Uber comes along and just changes everything. You know, and cities tried to outlaw it because, you know, it was getting around all of their regulations and they couldn't control it. But it's exploding. Uber is just, I mean, it's all over the world. Airbnb, you know, is like eliminating all, and bed and breakfast aren't even heavily regulated most places. It's one of the exceptions, but Airbnb says, look, you don't need any regulation. You want to? You have a room. You want to rent it to somebody? Rent it to somebody, and we'll help you do it. I love this kind of technology. So, what does that have to do with food and nutrition? Well, we'll talk about that when we come back from this break. So, stick around. We'll be right back. Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Kim's with me here. So, Kim, I was just talking about taxi cabs and bed and breakfast. And are you wondering how I'm going to wrap this around nutrition?
No, we all know you come back with a lesson. So we just hang in
there. Yeah, there you go. So here's the cool thing I just started reading about. People are using the same idea now. There's a bunch of startup companies, and they're using it to share food. And they're getting around most of the crazy food regulations. And there's companies now and websites and services that if you love to cook, and I do, and honestly, one of the problems I have is I cook more food than anybody can eat.
Yeah.
Just because I love playing around in the kitchen and I love cooking, and I always thought, and I say it all the time, we'll be in the kitchen cooking stuff and I'll think, we need 13 friends, you know, to come over because we have so much food. Well, there are companies now that are doing that. Like if you love to cook, they have these services where you go on and you kind of get approved or certified as a cook or a chef, but you do it all at home. There's no real regulations to this. The law doesn't know what to do with these kind of services, kind of like Uber and Airbnb. And you post a meal for this evening and you make, you know, you say, I'm going to make X number of servings. And then people actually sign up and buy a meal from you. So maybe for people who are too busy to cook and they're used to just grabbing something at the drive-thru or fast food, this would be an alternative. It might be somebody that lives close to you, and on their way home from work, they stop at your house and pick up a meal you prepared, and they take it home and eat it. They get a home cook. Yeah. And there are several of them. I was surprised. There are others that help you. Yeah, let me go back and find some. One of them that's pretty big in California, and they're actually fighting it, and they're trying to get new regulations, and they don't know what to do with this. It's called Josephine. So if you go to josephine.com, you can see how it works, and it's just very cool. So the websites provide all the support, they provide some training, they provide some meal ideas and helping people get started with this. They collect the money, so you don't even have to set up, you know, the ability to get paid. The money all goes through these web services, and of course they take a little piece of it. I love that. It's just such a cool idea.
It's a very cool idea.
Yeah, so there were some. Let me give you a couple other ones. Here's another cool one. This one, I really kind of like this idea because Lisa and I have been working on an idea for a while now. We went to an event in Portland a couple years ago, kind of a totally weird Portland thing called the World Domination Summit. And it's so funny because it's nothing about world domination. And there was just a lot of weird stuff, but it was fun. And there was a speaker there who talked about a thing she calls the neighbor's table. And
And
we just fell in love with this idea. Mm-hmm. It was the idea that we're all so busy, we all work, neighbors don't talk to each other anymore. And she had this beautiful big table built, and she would just host dinners and invite people over she didn't even know. And she called it the neighbor's table, and she would do it like once a month, and she met all these cool people, and it's grown now, and she spread the idea. And Lisa and I have been wanting to do it. We're waiting to get all our construction done. And there are some services in here now. There's one called Feastly. So think of the word feast and then add an L-Y, Feastly. And another one called Eat With. And they facilitate what they call pop-up dinners in people's homes. So, you know, Lisa and I could decide that, you know, this Friday night we want to do a dinner. And we put it up on the website, and you say we have, you know, openings for 12 people, and here's the price. And it's like showing up at a restaurant. You have a reservation. You could put out a menu and what you're going to cook, and people sign up through the website. The website does all the money collection and the scheduling and the reservations, and then you host the dinner, and people show up. And we love the idea. It's fun. We talked about taking this idea and taking all the proceeds, all of the profit, and just donating it to a different local charity every month. Kind of our way of giving back and having fun with it, meeting people and doing what we love, cooking. So it's like all these cool things coming together. But a lot of people are actually like creating a business out of this. You know, they love to cook. They don't want to open a restaurant, but they're actually making money hosting dinner parties at home.
I just think it's so cool. And I wonder if I wonder if some of our drivers out there, that this could be something, you know, on the road to get like a home cook, just thinking out of the box a little bit. But it just comes back to breaking bread together and the simplicity of sharing a meal with someone, or, you know, knowing that somebody made this, you know, specifically to share. That's what eating should be, and, you know, eating and drinking. How the heck did you find all those places?
I know. There's another whole group. There's another one called Homemade. Etsy is doing this, and Etsy's been around for a while doing other things. Mm-hmm. But let's say that you're really good at making beef jerky. Everybody loves your beef jerky. But you don't have the time to try to make it a real business and go through all the rules and regulations and packaging and all that other stuff that you would be required to sell beef jerky. So these kind of, again, it gets around a lot of the regulations that stop people from doing this. You make a homemade food product, and these websites help you sell it. Kind of like a virtual farmer's market kind of thing, because farmer's markets have exceptions to all the regulations. You know, you can make something at home, go sell it at a farmer's market, and you don't have to follow all the really strict regulations. These are kind of like virtual farmer's markets kind of thing. So just, I love that kind of use of technology. And you just put an idea in my head. I could see creating an entire service along these ideas, but deliver to truck stops. Find, you know, the service would find home chefs just like these do, but instead of maybe your neighbors being your target market, you would deliver to local truck stops that are close to you.
Wouldn't
great,
that be cool?
Yeah. I mean, how awesome would that be?
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Did you tell Lisa yet?
No, I just thought of it, and I'm looking at her to see if she was listening to that or not. And just so you know, I'm blaming this one on you. This was your idea.
That's a good one, actually. I love it.
Yeah, what a great idea. What a way for drivers on the road to have mm-hmm. access to think about it, because now if I'm a home chef,
mm-hmm.
I could go out and source really good local stuff. I could go partner
yeah.
with local farms. I could join a CSA. I could get, you know, really good local organic produce, pastured eggs. You know, it's getting much, much easier to find those things in local areas now. And one of these services, I think it was Josephine, when you sign up, they actually, they were two services that when you sign up with Josephine, you become a member. One of them is Thrive Market, one of our favorite places to shop.
Yeah.
Another one I didn't know about was called, let me see if I can find that one now. Oh, yeah, it's called Imperfect Produce. So it turns out that lots and lots of produce, let me see if I can go find this number here. In America, 1 in 5 fruits and vegetables grown don't fit grocery stores' strict
mm-hmm.
cosmetic standards. Now, this has nothing to do with nutrition or anything else. It's just the cucumber didn't grow straight. You know,
mm-hmm.
it grew crooked. They will never sell that stuff in grocery stores. And most of it just goes to waste. It gets discarded. Well, this company figured out, again, technology. They collect all of this imperfect produce, and you can go online and buy it.
That's insane. I'm looking at it now.
Yeah.
How awesome is that? Oh,
isn't that cool?
I love brilliant people. I love brilliant people.
I know.
Let's see. Oh, that's so great.
Yeah. We didn't get any calls, so I guess we're going to have to do that next hour. What do you think?
That sounds great. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah, cool ideas. My brain's working overtime, but speaking of time, we're out of it this time, so we're going to have to wrap this up, and we will do another hour of Destination Health this week, and we're going to go right to your calls and questions in that hour. So we will see you then. Thanks for joining us. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, here we go. We're going to get started on a second hour.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. This is our second hour this week of Destination Health. So, of course, my co-host, Kim Cockerham, is with me, and in our first hour, Kim, we just spent the whole hour talking about a book review, Nourishing Traditions, and then lots of new technologies and ideas and startup companies and bringing real food back to the people again, which I just love that idea.
Yeah, and you know what, and I'll go out and put some of those out on the Destination Health Facebook page too, because they're cool, that imperfect fruit. Our vegetables, which was imperfect produce, that Josephine, just really, really neat. So I'll get that stuff out there today.
Yeah, and then while we were talking about that, you came up with a killer idea that we're going to have to explore, and that would be a web service, a website that would connect people in local communities that want to cook, and connecting them delivering meals to drivers and truck stops. God, the as soon as you said that, I like got goosebumps. What a great idea.
Now, wait a minute.
What?
No, it is. But you got to take the credit for that one. That was awesome. But,
no, that was your idea.
I think we got to do something with that. I just think it's brilliant. And there's a gazillion people I know that would do like that, cook from local, you know, produce and meat and bring it to our tribe.
Well, you're right. And I'll tell you what, I would be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I live 100 yards off the interstate.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, our town, you've been there. Our town is
mm-hmm.
kind of like a big rest area on the interstate. Literally, if you're heading west on I-84, you get off at one exit. The town is only one street. And it's right straight through, and that street literally runs right back up onto the interstate again, and there isn't even a traffic light in town. Like I say, it's kind of like a big rest area, and the town for now is very truck-friendly. There's literally parking right on the side of the street. And I could see making meals and delivering to drivers right in their truck. That would be awesome.
There we go. I bet you would, because I've seen you cook, and you put a lot of love into it.
That would be so cool. So the first thing we have to work on is the technology. So we might be onto something here. but there are some very cool services popping up like this with people who love to cook hosting dinners and people
yeah.
paying to come over for a dinner party. And there are so many things I love about this. One, the people who are doing this many times are going to be foodies, and many of them are also part of kind of that local food movement. And so I think you're going to get really high quality. And so that's very cool, bringing that idea to more and more people, introducing people to things like grass-fed and pastured animals and fermented foods and things they may not encounter anywhere else. You know, you're really not going to encounter most of those things at restaurants. You're starting to see a little bit of it here and there. I love that idea that it's a way of spreading, you know, this really good way of eating to more people. I love the idea that it gets back to eating meals with people, something that is an important part of health that we don't realize a lot of times. And I love the idea of meeting new people and sharing ideas and learning from each other. We've become a society where we're so busy, you know, we don't know our neighbors anymore. We might know a couple
mm-hmm.
people that we work with. And this would be a way of, you know, slowing things down, meeting new people, sharing ideas, and doing it around food, which is traditionally how we used to eat. And I think that was
mm-hmm.
a part of the healthy aspect of eating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, good. Let's see where this goes.
Yeah. All right. So what do you say we get to some calls and questions?
That would be awesome.
All right. Let's start off in Minnesota. John, welcome to the program.
Uh-oh.
John, are you with me? Oh, John, I'm going to put you back on hold because I know you've been there a long time, and we're going to see if we can save that line. Let's go to Wisconsin. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. What's on your mind today?
I've got one main question. If there's time, I do have a second. But
sure.
The main thing is I am a local home daily driver, and I've already been kind of following some of your guidelines. You know, definitely not the strictest of people, but you know, for what I have done, I've already knocked off about 30 pounds, but I've started to plateau. And so I'm wanting to try and get more into this, but that's also going to involve doing more at home with the at-home meals and stuff. So my question is, I've got several young kids as well, and I'm wondering if you know if there's any special guidelines or anything like that that we should be, you know, making sure our meals are fit for them as well since they're still growing?
Yeah, that's a really great question, and I want to talk about that. How old are they?
The oldest is 7. The youngest is newborn.
Wow. Okay, great. So here's the interesting thing. The healthy food that we would eat, the healthy ways that we would eat, there is nothing about that would be wrong for a child. So the human body is the human body. The same things we should be eating are the same things they should be eating, with the one exception, obviously, being the infants. And, you know, if we look at nature, it had the answer for this. There's always been this controversy about breastfeeding versus bottle feeding. And it is absolutely 100% clear now, breastfeeding is far superior. It's not even close.
And we're nature, exclusive breastfeeding.
That's awesome. That is just awesome. We are learning how important that is. And I don't care how many articles people could find saying formula is better. You would never convince me. Nature knew exactly what it was doing. And when you look at formulas and see all the parts of it that are missing that are in mother's milk, and then what about all the things we don't even know that are in there yet that we haven't identified? So clearly, nature knew what it was doing. Breastfeeding is far superior, so I'm glad you're doing that. Here's the thing about kids. Two things we have to remember. They have no preconceived notions about food. If you fed them brain and they liked it, they would eat it and it would not bother them. This is what we were talking about on the other show. We have no preconceived notions. We develop what we think is normal about food. And unfortunately, most kids today think chicken nuggets and French fries and things coming out of a box and coming out of a can, that's what they find normal. So when you would attempt to take them to a farm and cut off a chicken's head and feed it to them, they're going to freak out. So the interesting thing, the exciting thing is children have no preconceived notion. We can feed them anything, and that will become their normal. So you want to introduce them to a wide variety of really nutritious foods. But there's something else we have to remember about children. They have very, very sensitive taste buds, and they are sensitive to not only taste but texture. So what we don't want to do is try to force something on a child because it's nutritious. If they don't like it, they don't like it. Try something else nutritious. Because forcing kids to eat things and to clean everything up off their plate and the way we were raised, this is bad. You shouldn't eat everything on your plate. Maybe your plate was too big. Maybe we put too much on it. If you're not hungry, don't eat. So one, we shouldn't force them to eat. We shouldn't force them to eat a food just because we know it's nutritious. We have to understand that their taste buds are very, very sensitive, and they're sensitive to texture. So introduce them to a lot of nutritious foods and find the ones they like. And focus on those, but keep trying to introduce new foods in a positive way, without threats, without forcing them to eat it. Make it fun, make it exciting. You know, if you're excited about eating a food, that goes a long way towards them. But always remember, if they don't like a food, don't force it. As we get older, our taste buds kind of deaden, and then more and more foods become attractive to us. They become, we like the taste and the texture more, as long as we weren't forced, because that puts a really negative connotation to a lot of things. So let me get to a break. We'll come back. We'll talk more about that. And Kim, I think you have something to add to that as well. So we're going to come right back and talk about that. Stick around. Yeah, we're up. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. We were talking with Scott in Wisconsin, and I know, Kim, you wanted to jump in here. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just had a thought. And Scott, first of all, I love that you're even asking this question and the fact your kids are young, because they are so impressionable, and you'll be more open to learn things. But the number one thing I think, too, is just really, really get them involved in everything from the cooking to going to the grocery store, you know, farmer's market and stuff. And you are going to create some awesome memories with them, you know, standing on a stool to help you cook, and just that will – and sitting down at the table and really focusing on the family meal. But, you know, you'll have to put your guard up against the marketing on TV and, you know, all driving down the road even. But you have control of that, and it's just going to be so good for them. And you'll enjoy every bit of it.
Yeah, we've already had to, you know, start fighting back against the marketing, mm-hmm. especially with our oldest ones. And not just food, but, you know, just any commercial they see on TV now, they're like, we need that, we need it. So, yeah, we're already gearing up for that fight.
Yeah, I think,
hey,
I think it was our friend JW said, I'm sorry, Kevin, real quick, I think JW said, our friend that joins the show every now and then, he'll say, any kind of food that's on TV is probably not good for you.
Here's one of the ways you might get creative around that concept, is if they see something on TV, try to think of a way that you might be able to recreate a healthy version of it at home and get them involved. Say, hey, you know, that's not a bad idea, but, you know, that's – and depending on the age, how in-depth you might get, that's overprocessed or they use really poor ingredients – but I think we could recreate it at home, so let's work on it together.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. And I know that, you know, our oldest two, they're, you know, already starting to want to help out. And, you know, and you're talking about introducing new foods. Yeah, I'd try giving the fermented vegetables a shot. And I think I might have actually overdid it on the garlic that I put in, because I tried one and it was cucumber, and I bit into it, and it felt like I ate, you know, an entire jar of pickles in one shot. But while I was working on making them, I tried to get them, kind of get them into the concept, and I'm going to try and get them to sample one if I can find some that aren't too intense.
Yeah, you know what, here's another idea, depending on, you know, what they're interested in. You could turn some of these things into like a science lesson. You know, fermented foods, you could, you know, learn together with them how the bacteria is converting the sugar into lactic acid. And you know, that may, if they're interested in learning those kind of things, that may be a part of it. And you could, you know, I remember, you know, in school when we would grow something in the class, you know, we would plant the seed and watch it grow, and how exciting that was. So you could do things like that as well and get them involved in that part of the food.
Okay. Yeah, definitely something I'll have to keep in mind.
And what else did you have?
Well, since I got into this and started looking at all the recipes and everything, it seems like half the things out there for a keto / paleo type diet involves cinnamon. Well, my wife actually has a cinnamon allergy, and I've never heard of that before. And I wonder if you have or had any insight to that.
And this is going to sound like I'm nitpicking, but I'm not. There's a clear distinction we should make here. She has a sensitivity or an intolerance, not an allergy. And the reason I say that is this is something they're real clear about. In order to have a true food allergy, you can only be allergic to a protein. So anything else, so you could be truly allergic to casein, which is the protein in milk. You can be truly allergic to the proteins in grains. You can be, but everything else, any other reaction to food is classified as a sensitivity or an intolerance. So that's what she has. and you can be, you can have sensitivities or intolerances to any kind of food. There are some that are very common, some that aren't so common. Being intolerant of cinnamon, I've never heard of that one before, but I don't doubt it. So one of the things you might find is that whether it's a true allergy or a sensitivity or an intolerance, it's probably not the food itself. It is probably the fact that her body is overwhelmed with other toxins, and this is like the straw that finally breaks the camel's back and puts her over the top. And what we find is when people clean up their diet, get rid of the grains and other foods, dairy is another big one that most people should eliminate in the beginning and then work on maybe trying to put it back in their diet. But even then, most people are going to do far better on raw dairy, raw milk cheeses, unprocessed, unpasteurized, or just eliminate dairy completely. And we have to look at other food sensitivities. And what we find is when you really clean up the diet, you fix digestion, you do a good detox, that when you go back, the foods you thought you were intolerant of, you're not anymore. So it's not really natural for our body to be intolerant of something like cinnamon that is a food. It's not really natural for our body to be intolerant of eggs. So when we find people who are, it usually turns out that their body is just so overwhelmed with other toxins and problems that they can't tolerate things anymore that they should be able to. So this is one of those areas in the NTP process where we focus on the foundations. We get the nutrient-dense whole food diet. We fix digestion. We do some detox. And then we find that many of those intolerances and sensitivities just go away. But for now, skip the cinnamon. It is a great spice. It's got some cool compounds. Maybe try turmeric. Turmeric is actually very similar to cinnamon in its benefits, but even more powerful. So if she's ever eaten Indian food, any kind of curries, and she hasn't had a bad reaction, they're loaded with turmeric. So that would tell you that she's not intolerant of that. But if you come across a food that has an ingredient, it's just not working, then either find a substitute or just stay away from it for now.
Okay. Definitely answered my questions. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome.
Thanks, Scott.
What do you think, Kim, that we see that quite a bit? And I loved your ideas about the kids. You know, get them involved in the whole process. It's such a great way to spend time with them. They learn. It creates a very positive experience around food.
Yeah, I wish I would have done more of that. You know, you get so busy, and, you know, I'm grateful my kids, you know, and I got caught up, you know, we didn't have all the fast food when I was growing up. And then when my kids were, you know, it was just the rail available, you get caught up in it. And what I'm so proud of my older kids is they have now, you know, taken control of their health, and they're, you know, aware of learning, and it's just it's really cool to see them come back to that when I didn't have you know, such a healthy home with them growing up. And so I love parents looking to do this now. It's really come full circle.
Yeah, it's interesting for me. I've always been kind of a foodie. I didn't always get it right. There were times I was eating, you know, in ways that I shouldn't have. But the one advantage I think I always did have as an adult, not as a child. As a child, I grew up on a really horrible, canned, not a lot of fresh stuff, processed, bad oils. You name it, I grew up on it. But then as an adult, pretty quickly, even before I was 20, like when I was 19 and in the service and I had my own apartment, I started cooking, and I loved it. So just the fact of cooking gets you closer to natural food. You're not eating processed food. I wasn't eating out a lot. And as I got older, I did more and more of that. So, my son Michael was brought up that way. And you know, most of his, he was a super picky eater. And I was as a child as well. And I think it comes down to those sensitive taste buds when we're young. And now I'm the opposite. I eat anything you put in front of me. And my son now is the same way. And he's a chef and he's really into the whole paleo. He's a primal health coach. Now it's so interesting to watch his twins. You know, I had a horrible diet growing up and I fixed it as an adult and I continue to fix it. He had a better diet than I did growing up, but it still wasn't perfect. And now he's fixing his, and the twins, it's just so exciting to watch them. They were breastfed. You know, Bridget was eating a really good diet while she was breastfeeding, which is important. They eat basically paleo primal now. They're a year and a half old. And it's just so exciting to see them starting their life this way.
Very cool. That's really cool.
So there's the music. We're going to get to a break and we're going to come back and get some more of your calls and questions. Stick around. Yes, brother. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Destination Health. Kim, I something else I talked about earlier is that small children are sensitive to taste, strong taste, and they're also very sensitive to texture. And one of the interesting things my son has found is that as they're trying to transition the boys into whole food, they're having a hard time. They seem really picky. There are just a lot of foods they won't eat. And the interesting thing is my son has always made, they've never really eaten commercial baby food at all. They were breastfed. And then they, when they went to food, my son made it all from scratch, bone broths. And obviously since they were still very young, he would puree it all together like a baby food. So he would, you know, simmer organic vegetables and then coat them in coconut oil and make them soft enough that they would puree. He would slow cook meats till they were soft enough that they would puree. And then he would put in bone broth to make it, you know, puree down nice and smooth and add an avocado. And I would look at the food they were eating and I would think, my God, that's more nutrition than most people get in a week. And they're getting it every single meal. And what he finds is as he tries to transition them to whole food, they're getting really picky. And with the pureed food, they would eat anything. Like he would put, you know, salmon and six different kinds of vegetables and herbs and cinnamon and whatever he put in there, he would puree it, they would eat it. So that's another trick with young kids. You might want to, you know, look at some vegetable juicing maybe and some smoothies, or even if they're eating pureed foods, or, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. You do want to get them onto whole foods. It helps their body learn how to digest. But for him, he's finding that he is going to continue pureeing their food so that they continue to get that nutrition as they transition over. And it's interesting because some of his friends are saying, oh, my God, you can't keep pureeing their food. They have to learn how to chew. And they'll learn, you know.
Learn.
But
mm-hmm.
Why not keep feeding them what they like to eat if it's that nutrient dense?
Yeah, that is really cool to take the time to do it. And I love that.
Yeah. Let's go to Minnesota. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin.
Hey there.
You guys hear me this time?
Yep.
Okay. Wild rice, how do you feel about that if it's harvested right off the river?
Not a big fan. And here's why. Okay. Wild rice is still a grain. It's sometimes referred to as a pseudo grain. But rice is grass. And, you know, if you've listened or read the book, Wheat Belly or Grain Brain, especially in Wheat Belly, he uses the term seeds of grasses. He doesn't call them grains. He calls them seeds of grasses, and that's what they are. We, as humans, we couldn't eat the grass, but we have found ways to process the seeds of grasses so we can eat them. And that's what wheat and rye and really all grains are, seeds of grasses. Rice is a grass. Wild rice is a little different. They kind of call it a pseudo grain, but it still has the anti-nutrients. It needs to be processed or prepared properly, and it's a lot of work to do it right. And when you're done, you have a food that has very little nutrition in it anyway.
Okay. I was just wondering. Okay, any idea on a cheat sheet from ingredients in the standard American diet over to ingredients of a keto diet? You know, instead of using vegetable oil, I've heard you say use olive oil or avocado oil. Is there any sort of a cheat sheet out there like that that you have found?
Kim, don't we have something?
I can't think off the top of my head, but I can look, John, and we have to have something. It might even be out on the Destination. I'll look for it and get it out on the Destination Health page. You're on that, right, John?
Okay. Yep.
Okay.
Kim,
let me do that.
Some of the stuff that Michael put together for the CMC, I think there might be something in there like that.
I'll look at there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
and
we'll get it
I
up
did
on. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I just got done reading Eat Fat, Get Thin. It was an awesome book. Then they also mentioned the Fed Up Tree in there.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one.
I watched that. It was absolutely awesome, but it got me thinking about something else that you used to really push. And that's
that?
The Fair Tax Now book.
Right.
With all of the issues of the politicians and lobbyists. So I thought that was really interesting. We may have to do a full ground roots effort on the fair tax and the ketogenic paleo diets.
Yeah, interesting. You know, so much of it, when we kind of get down to the core of some of these ideas, even though it might be about food or, you know, taxes or other things, it's like I was talking earlier about some of these new services that are popping up, things like Uber and Airbnb and now some of these others around food sharing. And really, it's a movement away from centralized controlling government. Exactly. Yeah. And I love all those ideas. And they're all, you can kind of see them all coming together now. That even people who may not really pay attention to politics or, you know, what's going on, I think naturally they feel this desire to move away from big controlling government and, you know, over-regulation.
Yeah, it's you watch that and you see these kids, and I truly feel sorry for the way we've been feeding our kids in school and how I was fed in school. When you see this stuff and get the information and how, you know, Michelle Obama was all against food. Now she's all against athletics because the big businesses got behind her and pushed her that way.
Right.
So it's sad, but it's amazing the distinction that I found in that with the government.
Yeah.
I figured I
kind of really
passed that on.
Really good observation. Thank you for that. Let's go to Ohio. Herschel, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey there.
Well, I got the lowest reading so far this morning, 230. It's coming along.
Good job.
Yeah. Started at 306. So we're getting
outstanding.
There.
Yes, congratulations.
But I have a comment. I do have a question, but I smell a showed idea.
Okay.
Because you just said that your son, and I believe you've referred to him as Michael, I believe I've heard you say.
Yeah.
Is a primal chef. Ding, 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 ding. Winner, winner. Chicken dinner. Get him on the show, Kevin.
So he is a classically trained French chef, and we all know about what we thought the French paradox, how the French could eat all these animal products and heavy cream and drink wine and do all the things we thought was so bad for us, and yet they're far healthier than we are. They have less of every disease. So he's classically French trained. But he's also really interested in paleo and primal, and he's been through the Primal Health Coach program. And he loves to cook, and he's thinking about, you know, some sort of a food startup company. So, he's got a lot of things coming together. He's going to go through the NTP program when he can save enough money to do that. So we'll see. We'll see.
Okay. Well, my question for you, I called last week and I talked to Kim, and I got the HCL, the hydrochloric tablets.
Yeah.
But I have been sick so many times and been through so many struggles with this, and I'm feeling really good now, and I don't want to screw it up and do it wrong. I've heard you say that it's a substantial meal. Could you give me an impromptu menu of what you mean by that and make sure that I do this right when I start working with it?
Sure. So what we mean by substantial is we want to make sure there's enough volume of food that we're not putting hydrochloric acid into an empty stomach. And we also want to know what the dosage would be for a substantial meal. And then we can modify it if we still want to take it for a smaller meal or even for a snack. So let me give you an example. A substantial meal should include, it should be the basic macronutrient breakdown that we always talk about. High fat, moderate protein, a little bit of carbohydrates. But when you look at the plate, the carbohydrates are going to be the biggest portion of the plate. They're just a smaller percentage of calories. So when we come back, we'll talk about what that plate would look like, and then how we would do the HCL challenge, and then how we would adjust it for different. So stick around. Right back. I'm Kevin Dunn. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. We're going to try to knock out some calls. We're talking with Herschel in Ohio about how to use the HCL supplement. Great question. So for me, a substantial meal would look like our traditional macronutrient balance, high fat, moderate protein, low carbs. So it might be, let's go with something simple, a fatty burger. So we wouldn't want, you know, lean ground beef. We would want a nice fatty ground beef mix. So we might make a burger, throw some bacon on it, some cheese maybe, especially if we have some raw milk cheese, crack an egg over it, you know, put some mayonnaise on it, put avocado on it. We want to add good fat to that protein. So think of all the ways we've got the protein in the patty. We've got some fat in there. We want as much as possible. We could add fat. And then have that with a big plate of vegetables, whether they're steamed, cooked, raw, a big salad. Make sure we add lots of fat to that, some nuts, some seeds, again, some avocado. You could throw in a side of fermented vegetables kind of as a condiment. So we're talking about a pretty substantial meal here. Could be, you know, 1,000 calories or so. And when we sit down, we've got that meal ready. right as we sit down, we take the first hydrochloric acid capsule right then and then start eating. But keep in mind, we want to start practicing mindful eating. Like when I meditate or say grace or slow down, get your body back into that parasympathetic state, chew your food properly, and wait just a couple minutes, 3 or 4 minutes at most, and pay attention to your stomach area down around your solar plexus and see if you start to notice any warmth or any heat in that area. And if you don't, after 3 or 4 minutes, take another capsule and then keep eating and pay attention to your stomach and wait to feel that kind of warmth. And you keep doing that, taking a capsule, waiting 2 or 3 or 4 minutes and seeing if you feel it. As soon as you feel that warmth or that heat, stop taking the capsules. And let's say it was 5. Your number then becomes 4. We don't want you to take these till you feel it, but we need to know when you would feel it. And what should happen, and now 4 would be your number for a full meal. Well, there's lots of times I don't eat full meals. I might just grab 3 or 4 pieces of cured meat of some kind and a couple pieces of cheese and maybe a fermented pickle. Well, if 4 is my number for a full meal, I might take 2 if I eat this, or maybe even 1 and see what happens. And it's going to require a little experimentation over time, but you'll figure out what your number is. If you go over and you take too much, it's not going to hurt anything. You might feel a little uncomfortable. You might feel even something that feels like a little heartburn. And then you'll know, just do a little less the next time. We have 2 different strengths of hydrochloric acid that we can use as a supplement. I've really switched now to starting everybody on the strong one, because nobody so far has figured out that one strong one is too much. Many people are taking 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 of the strong ones. So you can wean yourself off of these. As your body gets the nutrition it needs, it will start producing its own hydrochloric acid, which is what we want. So if your number was 4, in 2 or 3 weeks, if you're doing it and you're eating good food, you might find one day you sit down and you take 4 and you start to feel a burn. So now you back it off to 3, and then pretty soon you'll be on 2. And if we get down to one of the strong ones, sometimes people can just get off right then, just stop taking them and they'll feel fine. Other people may need to transition from one of the strong ones to 4 or 5 of the weak ones and then work their way down till they're off of it completely. But our goal for everybody would be to get them off of the HCL over time.
That makes sense. Okay. That's what I wanted to know.
There you go. So
thanks,
get
Kevin.
Practice in and call us. And here's another thing. The number you need to take is going to be an indication of how bad your digestion is. The good news is, if you're one of those people that's going to have to take 5 or 6 of the strong ones, the improvements you're going to see over time in your health are going to be amazing. Because what it tells us is, if you need that much hydrochloric acid support, you have not been digesting your food well at all. And once you start, you're going to be amazed at the physical changes.
Good. Ed, that's the one thing that I've had the most trouble with through all of this, and that is the one thing that my NTP did not do, is have me do anything about stomach acid. So that's why I got them from Kim the other day.
Good, good. So give
Thank
that
you.
A try, and call us and let us know how it's going.
Will do.
All right. Thanks for the call. We'll talk to you soon. Let's go to Washington. Jerry, welcome to the program. Uh-oh. I don't hear Jerry there, so we're going to head off to Oklahoma. Frank, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks. Kevin, hi. Kim, hi.
Hi.
This main thing is a comment, and Kevin, I said this on air over the weekend, but I wanted to be sure Kim was in tow. We just had the most delightful experience ordering product, and I said to Kevin, Kim, I'd like to hire you to just take all my orders for everything I need the rest of my life. You know, the caring and the concern, it just wasn't like, you know, here's a bottle of pills, have a nice day. It you know, the questioning, especially back to my wife, and really trying to help make sure that the thing was right, and then the follow-up with email. I mean, it was just a wonderful experience, and you have a fan for life in my household.
Thank you so much. It was an honor. It's an honor to work with you guys, and your wife, Patty, was a dream to talk to. What a sweetheart.
Yeah, and you can tell that you care, and it's coming across. It means a lot. And Kevin, on your side, I have to say that in that same call, you said you were just blessed to, you know, work with wonderful people. And I have to tell you a short, quick one, different life before trucking. I was an executive in the phone business, and about every other year, we'd make a trip to Nordstrom's because we wanted our service representatives and sales representatives to act like the experiences we got in Nordstrom's, which is usually awesome. And so we'd go there and we'd talk to them about different marketing and sales things and so forth. And invariably somebody on my team would say, well, what kind of a training program do you have to have those associates turn out that way? And to a person in Nordstrom, all of their executives would say, we don't have a training program. And we'd go like, well, how is that possible? And they'd say, we just hire those kind of people. And,
you know
if you think, that, go ahead.
That's a really great point. And some things it's almost impossible to train for. And I think this is one of them. You can't train somebody to be caring. You can take somebody who has those strengths and tendencies and you can help them develop them. But I believe there are some things that it's virtually impossible to train for. And you've heard me talk in the past about the standout assessment that we use. And what the standout assessment does is it finds people's strengths. And then my job, I think, is to help people find a place in the company to use those strengths and help them develop them. And Kim, what were your strengths on the standout assessment?
I'm a provider and connector.
Yeah.
She
scores off the charts as a provider. She truly, that's her nature. It's her instinct. It's her strengths. I believe that you can't train people to be that way. In fact, you couldn't train me to do what Kim does. I couldn't do it. That's just not my strength.
It comes through like aces, I'll tell you.
Well, and you know what, Frank, it's our whole Let's Truck team. It's across the board from the top down. So, and all of, you know, that's one thing I noticed is as soon as starting to work with all of our tribe out there 3 years ago, I've never met the most kind people, you know, on the road that follow Kevin and Let's Truck and are part of everything. So it's truly an honor. But thank you so much. You just made my day.
Well, you know, sometimes it's hard to listen to that kind of feedback and praise because, you know, the shy and bashful part comes out, you know, in most of us, and it's just well-deserved. So I'm sorry you had to hear it. But and then finally, the final thing, I'll just say that I've had some recent really good experiences. This is for all truckers. TJ Fresh at the Newer Pilots, you can do really good with real food. Now, they're not going to be pastured eggs, but with eggs, both hard-boiled as well as scrambled and bacon, you can really do good in those places. So just look for the TJ Fresh ones.
Great tip. Great tip. Thank you for that. And that kind of brings up the point of we'd love to have local, fresh, organic, pastured, all that. But when we can't, just moving towards whole, real food is a great step in the right direction. And Kim, we did it again. We blew through a whole show.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to get out of here. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy, and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, thanks. And Kim, as always, great stuff.
Yeah.
And now we've got some new ideas to work on. Imagine
that.
Yeah,
we do. Yeah, we do. Thanks for being here, everyone.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.